We are here today with Professor Steinfield, who is a professor of political science and a faculty fellow at the Watson Institute. In light of the situation with Obama instituting a cap and trade mechanism for industry, how will that affect the renewable energy economy, if at all?
Many people in industry are willing, and some are very eager, to produce technologies that will help for energy sustainability. Even many big industrial users of energy are eager to implement and, you know, employ technologies that will help them use energy more efficiently and also contribute to the solution of sustainability problems. The problem is that many of them want to know and want to see a reliable price, really, for carbon emissions. It's not so much that they're unwilling to take on this burden of dealing with maybe an extra cost or to jump into and invest to take the opportunity of the markets that might come out of cap and trade system, but they need to see some reliable prices. And the problem right now is they don't see those prices. So unless we have some kind of carbon tax or some kind of tradable system of emissions rights, it's very hard for these companies on the production side to invest accordingly or on the demand side to invest accordingly. Right now, the politics in the United States are such that any kind of carbon tax or a cap and trade system seems to be rather far off.
Could you tell us a little bit about your own research?
Sure. I'm very interested in issues of industrial upgrading. How do companies learn to do new things that allow them to capture more value? How do they develop the know-how that allows them to do increasingly sophisticated activities? So I'm very interested in that in developing economies. Most of my work has looked at China, but I'm interested generally in how do developing economies learn how to innovate, how do they learn how to upgrade commercially so that they can grow faster and make more money. But of course, these issues are also applicable to advanced industrial economies, including in the United States. For me personally, I enjoy looking at these companies at the level of the enterprise. I like seeing how things actually play out on the ground. Not because I'm interested in making money or interested in business per se, but for me, I find that issues of politics and policy and markets and consumer preferences, they all kind of come together at the level of the firm. And so I end up spending a lot of time, even though I'm a professor of political science, I spend a lot of time in enterprises, frequently in China, talking to entrepreneurs and business people and some of the regulators who regulate them.
Great, that sounds really exciting. And my final question for you, we understand that you've recently transitioned from MIT to Brown.
That's right.
How has that transition been? How do Brown students communicate differently in the classroom than MIT students? Could you give us a little bit of that perspective?
Sure. I was at MIT for 17 years and had a very good experience there. MIT is a great place, but I am so thrilled to be here at Brown. It's just been a great first couple of months for me. The culture at Brown, to the extent I understand it, and certainly to the extent I've experienced it, is very different from MIT. Partly, I think, because MIT is a primarily engineering and sciences school. I think many of the students, although they're very entrepreneurial at MIT, they're on a little bit more of a slightly more rigid track academically and have less space in their schedules to look at social sciences and the humanities. At Brown, my sense is because, in part, the academic curriculum is so flexible, students end up involved in so many different disciplines and areas. I find that very creative, and that sort of cross-pollination across disciplines that the students do, you know, they weave it together. I find that very stimulating and very creative. The other thing I find is that students here are really willing to talk. You know, in the classroom, they prepare, they read in advance, and they're ready to talk. It makes being a teacher very, very easy. It makes it very easy to learn as a teacher. So I'm thrilled.
You are currently teaching a class this semester on the political economy of renewable energy. Is that correct?
That's right.
And do you have any plans for the class you want to teach in the spring?
I'm going to advertise it. I'm teaching a lecture course on what's called The Rise of China. And it's going to look from the economic and the political and social perspective on what this rise that we've seen over the last roughly 30 years is all about. How should we understand it? And how should we understand what its implications are for all of us outside of China? And the course will try to integrate Chinese voices, voices from Chinese scholars and observers, and also the observations of outsiders. So that's one class, open to people with no background or people with a lot of background. And then there's a seminar aimed a little bit more at people with background, but I'm open to allowing lots of different kinds of people in. The seminar looks at the study of political science at China. So how have different theories and perspectives from the discipline of political science helped us to understand certain things going on in China, and how the things going on in China helped us maybe or forced us to rethink some theories about how politics in general works.
Great. Well, we'll look forward to seeing those classes in the spring.
Great. I look forward to having many of different kinds of Brown students in those classes.